please rise. Please join me in the salute to our flag. Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Hanson.
Here.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Mutchler.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Present.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. All present and counterpart. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the period where the public can speak to the Council of anything that's not on tonight's agenda. So anyone from the public would like to speak, there's one back there. So come forward, please. Welcome. Name and address, if possible.
Hi, my name is Chrissy Baker. I am the administrator with the Ferndale Community Resource Center right next door. I just kind of want to give a little update on what's been going on at the center. I've been there since late February, and one of the first things I realized is that so few people in Ferndale knew that the center was there and what it did. So I've kind of made it my goal to get that out there, that information out there. One of the things that I really wanted to do was get the clothing bank going. It's been a very big success now. Back in June, in the month, there was approximately 65-70 people that use the clothing bank. Now we do that in a week, maybe two. It's grown exponentially. We do have a member of the community who has very graciously, anonymously agreed to donate so that we have a storage unit, a heated storage unit where we can store clothing. So anyone that has any clothing they'd like to donate, bring it right on over. We're there from 10 to 3 every day. Another thing I wanted to do was get an employment, center, it's more of a room, but so that the community members can come in and see what jobs are available. We do at least every other day, we do internet searches, we print up the information and then make a small posting that goes on the wall in one of the rooms in the center. People can come in during our hours, peruse what's there. When they want more information on something, we can help them find that out. We will help with people who wish to apply online. We also help with resumes, cover letters, and we have members of the community who have offered to do mock job interviews. I'm very excited about that. Then people can come over, use our copier, printer, fax machine for anything they need, and no charge. Another thing that happened that I'm very excited about, I like to look in newspapers and see what's going on in other communities. One thing I noticed was that DSHS has a mobile CSO, customer service office, and I contacted Olympia, and they came last week on Tuesday. It was very exciting. And it was very successful. Jan England, who is their outreach specialist and on the truck, was very pleased. Our numbers were 23 people used the truck. She said that's very impressive for a first visit. And she asked if they could come back every 6 months at least. And I said, why, certainly they can do that. So hopefully that will become something that people in the community will know is there. They're in the truck. They are able to do anything they would do down in the Bellingham DSHS office, but without that wait, without having to travel back and forth. And we were also very fortunate on that truck to have someone from the Department of Child Support Services, and she helped three different people. So I'm done. Thank you, Sam. Hi.
Councilor Zimmerman.
Thank you, Chrissy, for what you do. Is your intention to apply for some grants? I mean, I just see an incredible need that you're fulfilling to use more resources. We're going through a budgetary period right now. Is there any way that the city can help you help others?
Well, the first thing the city does for us very graciously is...
As far as grants.
Well, as far as grants, honestly, I am not really involved in the grant decisions. That would be our board of directors. But I will say that the city very graciously allows us to use the building next door, and without that, we would not exist. So we're very grateful for that. So anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience speaking on anything that's not on tonight's agenda? Seeing none,
I would assume that you would have something to say.
Welcome, John.
Thank you.
Name and address.
John, Papa John Robinson, 6072 Malloy. And I'm just wondering, I keep on getting asked the post office if they still remember what the Gettysburg address is. But I'm not sure if he had a zip code with it, so maybe they don't know. But anyhow, I have a two-part presentation tonight. The first is I want to present something to the mayor. And secondly, after that, I want to do a plethora of accolades and plaudits that will include a number of you in the room, both in front and behind here. So now I do need to call attention to this award now to Greg and Mark. You guys need to pay special attention because I'm giving this to the mayor as representative of the community, but you guys need to pay special attention, okay? Now, this genesis of this idea came from some friends of mine that I have at Hagen's that work in the back in the bakery. But it was helped a great deal by Little Caesars over here. Okay, I want you to know to give some accolades to our local businesses. And here's what I have to give you, Mayor. Since I was given, when I went over there to Hagen's, they said, John, we have a gift for you. And I said, well, I held up my hand, and they said, well, we want you to be rolling in dough. So what they did is they gave me a whole bunch of dough. And since I love this community, I'm a Ferndalean, I can't imagine keeping it all to myself. So I want him to help all of you roll in dough.
Now,
you
guys need to pay special attention. I'm not rolling that. I will not roll in that.
You won't? Well, Gary might, though. But remember, you guys need to watch him, though. Make sure he shares it. Now, the second part of this is now I know you're just beside yourself with joy.
I am.
You can add that to the other gifts that I've given you now. The other part of this is accolades and plaudits. And the first thing I want to do is to make note of the fact that remind you that one time, many years ago, I was in law enforcement. And remember, I'm not saying it was a real long time ago, but we did have the muzzle-loaded kind of things there. And I can't remember what the speed limit was on the stagecoaches as we came west. But anyhow, so I recognize a good law enforcement department. And as far as I'm concerned, we have no finer, do I know, a police department anywhere than right here, headed by Chief Knapp. Now, among my friends on the county council are Barbara Brenner and Pete Kremen. I was talking with both of them recently about the jail, and when they found out, because I moved from Linden some time ago, they found out I lived in Ferndale, they both, on their own, without any prompting, whatever, said to me, you have the finest police chief of which I'm aware. And I happen to echo that sentiment. I think he's just, I told him he can begin thinking about retiring in 2020. And tell them what I keep trying to do is to help him feather his nest, but he keeps on refusing the feathers. So I don't know what I'm going to do with the guy. But our local police department, I like every one of them. I haven't found a jerk in the group. I'm very proud as a Ferndalean to have the kind of law enforcement we have here in this city. Secondly, I want to ask you all, and you don't need to raise your hands on this, but to answer, I hope you all and everybody back here too has a subscription to the Record Journal, because I think in Mark Reimers and the folks there, that's a great little paper, and if you don't know what's going on in your own town, shame on you. And if you own a business, you should be in that business as well as your home. So I highly recommend. We have a great paper here, and I'm proud of that too. And then the next thing I have on here is the Chamber of Commerce. As far as I'm concerned, when it comes to Guy and Christine and Paul, Chris over there, and other volunteers that we have an outstanding Chamber of Commerce, again, of which I'm very proud as a citizen, so I think they deserve accolades and plaudits. And last of all is all of you here, including some candidates. I've noticed recently some of you doing some public things, which I think you should get recognition for. And one is I noticed that Carol passed out here a week ago, Saturday, I think it was helping with the food drive at Hagen's. And then I noticed also that Eric and Mel and John were over here selling out what they claimed was hot dogs. I hope it was, because I had one. That was something like that. That's what they were claiming. And for the good of the Downtown Merchants Association. And then I also noticed here on that same Saturday, if I remember correctly, that Lloyd was out riding his bicycle. And I know that the mayor often walks.
30 seconds.
Okay, very good examples. Okay, and so I have something for you. I'll hand to you later on. Each of you get a feather. Okay, so you can put it in your cap. If you haven't got one, get one.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else for the public comment period?
Mr. Mayor, seeing none, we'll move on.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Boyd Zimmerman, 2234 Main Street, Edgar City Council.
Two weeks ago, I gave out some artwork, and I was remiss in getting one to Councilman Olson here. And that's just an appreciation of your service, and I think I'm, out of everyone here, I've learned the most from him as far as confrontation and asking the tough questions. ding the hammer. So if I had a little bit more courage walking out of here than I do when I first stepped out with him. And here's a guy that ran, won, ran, lost, and come back and run again. So that just shows you tenacity and he's a love for the city. So thank you very much.
Moving on in the agenda, I have the consent agenda before you, City Council.
Move for approval.
Okay.
Second.
I'd like to remove for discussion the water issue.
Okay. So we'll move the water softener down to, C2. Okay, so the rest of the consent agenda, I have a motion and a second. Did you get it, clerk?
Yes.
Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Okay, next up is a presentation of proclamation of flood awareness. This is a mayor proclamation from the City of Ferndale. Whereas the City of Ferndale has experienced the social, economic, and environmental consequences to damage to property caused by flood disasters, and whereas Flood Awareness Week is an opportunity to raise awareness about the importance of preparing and understanding flooding in Ferndale and to encourage all citizens to better prepare their homes and businesses for the upcoming flood season, and whereas emergency preparedness depends on the leadership and efforts of public officials dedicated to public safety, and whereas emergency preparedness requires the establishment of far-sighted and proactive public policy, and whereas by being informed and prepared and by taking proper protective action, the people of City of Ferndale can reduce the potential for loss, life, and damaged property when threatened by these events. Now, therefore, I, Gary Jensen, Mayor of City of Ferndale, do hereby proclaim the week of October 21st to 27th, 2013 as Flood Awareness Week in Ferndale, Washington. So one for public works to keep and one for our official records.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilperson Ingram.
Last month we had our annual flood meeting for the County Emergency Management, and Katie and Bo were down there and I was there. I just wanted to tell you how that meeting started. The very first speaker up for that meeting was a guy from the National Weather Service, some doctor of meteorology. And he walked up to the microphone and says, well, our predictions are it could be wetter this year than normal, or it could be drier than normal. We're not sure. So, there you go.
Okay, we have a presentation on the subject. Councilperson Goodrich?
I was just thinking, was you reading that, maybe our esteemed web guru, web site person, he's paying attention. could put the link or put a link on our city site to the river chart. I know when we had those heavy rains, it took me a while to finally go through all the different NOAA pages or whatever to get to the one that showed the river water level.
Sure, we do that. Yeah, we post it on our Facebook page.
So. It's on the Facebook page, but
I just thought, you know, there's an easy way to help people, you know, in those times.
Yeah, absolutely. Our Facebook page is where people go generally for emergency issues, for all issues, to be honest. Our our Facebook page is used about 20 times more than our city website. So it's a very effective tool for us. But I will do both.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a presentation by Bo and Wendy.
Doing my job.
Do I need new glasses or is that
perfect?
I believe you too.
Well, first of all, thank you for letting us be here tonight.
Microphone.
Okay. How's that? Can you hear me now? So we'll just go through a brief summary of kind of what Public Works does in a given year to prepare for floods and hopefully do a good job of putting it out to the public of how we do it and what we expect and what we hope for the public when they see this stuff and actually get involved a little bit. So we'll start with, this is the breakdown of the slideshow. So every spring, we have a levee inspection with the Army Corps of Engineers, and they come through and look at the county's levees from the mouth of the river all the way up into the South Fork, North Fork, Middle Fork. And our section is included in that, so they come by and actually sit and talk to us a little bit. We walk the system, make sure it's still holding up the way that it was designed.
Do we have to cut out a whole lot of trees out of our levee or something?
No, there's a vegetation management deal later in the slides that kind of gets through what the county's trying to get everybody involved in right now. So then we go from the on-levee inspection to the in-water levee inspection, and this deserves hazard pay here. That thing took us a while to fight him off, but anyway, Wendy and I annually get in the river, and we inspect the toe of the slope. We inspect the riverbanks. We're looking for voids in the rock, slides, any kind of burrowing, animal trails, any of that stuff that we need to report, and then if we need to fix it, repair it before the floods come. So Paul was mentioning the winter storm meeting that we had, Waukam Unified Management. And then we also do a training deal with FEMA every year where we have three or four representatives of the city of Ferndale goes, and we get to learn all of FEMA's new tracking policies, what they will pay for, what they won't pay for, and what, like this year, it's what, $740,000 for the county. If we hit $740,000 damage, then they will declare a disaster. So those are all things that are interesting to us and things that we need to know to move forward with this. So, you know, when Army Corps call and say, how much money have you spent, it's really important that we know how to track that, know what is eligible to be tracked and what isn't eligible to be tracked and paid for. And then the levy meeting, actually the Army Corps is supposed to be up this fall, but they had to furlough some people out of that, and with the federal shutdown, they weren't able to make it. He's still trying to get us scheduled for this winter, but not sure if that's going to happen because he's backlogged now. So then we have our own little flood prep meeting, which is tomorrow. Every year we get together and we discuss these things. Janice gives us a great presentation. We have Whatcom County come out, River and Flood Division come out, and we work sandbags. We go through some new procedures, just kind of a refresher on how to do it, when to do it, and why we're doing it. This includes everybody. Most staff that's involved with it has some time that they can get away. That's how we spend about an hour of our day tomorrow.
So all city staff, not just Public Works?
Right.
No?
Not all staff, but a lot.
Okay.
A lot, yeah. So then we go through a checklist every year of what we have, what we need, communication, materials, volunteers, how we're going to configure volunteers, personnel, what have we changed from last year to this year, what do we need to do better, what, you know, if we have new people that enter new roles into it, we need to identify those folks and get them involved, get them to the FEMA training if needed. We always go through our safety equipment, and then obviously our hot spots in Ferndale that we've kind of figured from 2009, from debriefing meetings, where our real points of interest were, and that's that list under hotspots there. And then press release information, you know, obviously we're going to work through SAM. I think Katie and Sam are involved in most of the public outreach stuff, and we'll just work through them to get all the information we need out as quickly as possible and to many as folks as we can. So our lines of communication are broke down in Public Works, and this was also kind of a cumulative effort after 2009 to get a little bit more organized to where maybe We're not using the cell phones as much. Maybe the cell phones actually work because everybody's not doing it and we're not overloading the system. So if everybody did this, I think the cell phones would work in an emergency. If everybody just kind of does business as usual and we're the only ones that do this, then we're probably going to still have some problems. But it puts everybody in some direct path of the information that they need to get and where they need to get it, and then getting it out to the public and using it for our internal use as far as fighting the flood.
So was Wendy going to be in charge of volunteers? Is that?
Wendy will be in charge of volunteers, but okay, through somebody else.
Okay.
And then this is just kind of our written assignments of who we're communicating with and who's how it's broke down. I won't go through all of them. You guys can read some of them. But we have key people from City Hall that maybe not so much involved with Public Works, but have been a key part of getting into this flood fight with the FEMA data gathering. Mm-hmm. That information, it's imperative that we do really, really, really good data gathering, because if we don't, we're missing money that's coming back from the federal level to us, and we can't afford to miss that money if we have some problems. They cover all kinds of things, debris removal, hazardous material removal, trails, parks, roads, all kinds of stuff. And if we miss, you know, a couple items, we could be spending that money ourselves to repair. So we need to be really on top of it. This was our flood our levee mitigation project. So where we rebuilt the levee, Brent, this is I think what you were asking about, cutting down all the trees. We had to remove a bunch of those trees.
About from Pioneer Park South. Didn't they take out a bunch of stuff there and then seed it?
Yeah, that was the diking district. We talked about south of the treatment plant.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. South of the water treatment plant, wastewater treatment plant, that was the diking district, went in there and did some clearing of the underbrush so that they can actually inspect their section of that bank and the back slope of that levee. Up until then, they hadn't been able to get into there to inspect that, and that's part of the SWIFT program that we're in now that will help everybody, hopefully from the top down to the bottom, get involved with vegetation management. But we planted 200 trees here for the one levee project we did right there next to Pioneer Park, the new grass that you saw in the one photo, that stretch where we took out the trees. Would we go 4-1, Wendy? We had to plant 4 trees to every one we took down. So that's the 200 you see there. That was to provide shade for the water. It's not erosion control. It's not any of those things. It shades the water, keeps the water cool. Pump station number 8, these are stormwater pumps underneath the railroad tracks. We just completed our upgrade of it. Mike Olinger helped us out a bunch with this, with the whole panel, all the alarm systems. So now we get alarms on this thing when the pumps aren't working. We don't have to wait for that thing to go underwater to know it's not working. So we get alarms on it. Mike can respond to it or call me. We can respond to it through that.
Is this storm or sanitary?
This is the storm water. So it used to flood under there when those pumps would quit in heavy rain. Mike will now get an alarm. Now, granted, the vault's not very deep, so by the time we get the alarm and respond, we'll probably see some standing water, but it won't be that thigh deep, waist deep stuff that we used to see where we had to just close the road and just stop everybody. They should still be able to manage to get through there as we're making our repairs.
If there is a flood in that area, is there a sanitary sewer that goes rolls over into?
No. Nope. Okay. If we flood underneath there, if the river comes over the top of that, and it will, at 23 feet, it will start flooding that. At that point, we will most likely lose the ability to keep that water off the road. Those pumps will just overheat, and they will just cook themselves out. So at the point where we're having trouble keeping up, we'd probably just shut the pumps down, call it good, close the road, because there's nothing you're going to do about where that water's coming from, because it comes right through that Oxford property,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can't push it back in because it'll just come out further on Main Street.
Now, at 22 feet, Vandergat's usually underwater at that point.
Okay? Yeah, Vandergat usually goes under somewhere between 17.5 and 18 feet. And then this is the next section of levee we actually want to get constructed from the BP or from the PUD intake to the south. and get rid of the Jersey barriers and actually make a construction project and much like the south side of that and tie that all in so that we're done with the super sacks. We're really hesitant to remove the super sacks because of what happened in 2009. We want to kind of leave that stuff there. And, you know, I understand that it's an eyesore and maybe not the best entrance to the city of Ferndale. But in an event where we start getting that 23-foot flood, I think it's going to be really important that we kept those things out there.
Do those super sacks have a life expectancy to them?
We've replaced 20 of those this year. We put them up in 2009 and just replaced 20 of them. We've put a couple in there periodically when people hit them with their cars.
Yeah.
But we went through and inspected all of them, and there was 20 of them that needed some work. UV, all, you know, just kind of
yeah.
eats it up. If you keep them in the shade, and that's why you'll see the black Bisqueen pulled over the top, people tend to kind of remove that stuff and rip stuff apart and not leave stuff alone, but whatever. If we keep it covered up, they last a lot longer. And then the SWIFT project is the new county program, and this is for vegetation control from the top down to the bottom. This is supposed to alleviate Army Corps and Fish and Game from arguing about actually how the vegetation is going to be managed on the levees. Because if you go to Army Corps, they have a program. You follow it, and Fish and Wildlife comes in and says, no, you're not allowed to do that. Well, Army Corps just told us we could. Yeah, but you can't. Those two federal agencies don't see eye to eye when it comes to this stuff. So now with this whole SWIFT process, it's supposed to manage that from the top to the bottom with Fish and Game permission. And Army Corps is backing off a little bit on their vegetation management, and Fish and Game is giving a little bit on their end. So they're trying to come up with a happy medium so that there's a definitive answer to everybody's question, what does our levee need to look like? So we're a part of this SWIFT process now, and our kickoff meeting is October 29th. And from that, we'll be designated to, like, teams of different branches of the SWIFT program and come up with a whole bunch of people, given ideas, and then obviously the county is kind of seeing this thing through, making sure that they're going to get, not allow a whole bunch of people just to come in and give opinions that, you know, oh, this is my little piece. Yeah, that's great. We're gonna try to prioritize from the top down for vegetation only. And then obviously flood awareness. Just know that it can happen. You know, hopefully the public understands. I know that there's some people that move into Ferndale that really see that river for 3 years and think, wow, what a pretty river. You know, it's always muddy, but man, we never get high water. 4 years later, they're underwater because they had no idea that that river got that high. So Wendy will put a mailer out in our utility bills and the stormwater solutions, and it comes with all kinds of ideas and a lot of information on where you can go, who you can call, how to be prepared for a flood fight, just different safety messages for the public so that they may understand what actually happens along this river. And then our sandbags, just the way that we've always done it, and I believe it's correct, is we don't give out sand or sandbags until there's emergency declared. There's a couple reasons for that. One, we can't get sand or sandbags from Whatcom County until they declare an emergency. Mm-hmm. Then they can help. So we're kind of on our own to stock these things and keep them up and keep the sand on hand until an emergency is declared. Then you can come get them. Our sandbag station, right off the bat, for people to show up and actually fill their own to fight their own problems is right at City Hall. We understand that it's in the floodplain, but at that point, we're not in any danger. Come get it, and by the time that pile's down and probably gone, we might have to relook at where to put the next station if we continue to have it there because the water's receding and people still need sandbags, or is the water still coming? What's the prediction? You guys were talking about that website and the NOAA puts out that hydrological prediction. If that thing keeps climbing and it's saying, you know, 22 and a half, 23, we'll start thinking about, all right, we got to get stuff out of the low areas, start getting up to high ground. At that point, you just leave the stuff that's in place and make a new setup somewhere else.
What kind of a time frame are you talking about like that? I mean, a 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour, 24
hours? Well, the way that that river works so far, we don't get a lot of flash flood event, right? It's a big bubble, and you can actually, if you go down there about every hour and look upstream, you can actually see this thing starting to happen. You can see this water starting to come. It is literally a bubble, and it goes through, and that bubble in 2009 was about 18 hours, something like that, which is a huge duration to have that much water, I mean, at flood stage and above. Usually they're 12 hours, gone. This thing's at 18, and it's still just barely trickling down. And it's barely going down, and it's slow.
You get some data from Deming or someplace, and then does it give you so many hours to...
Yeah, they take the feed from Deming and predict how much water, how many cubic feet, how fast it's going. Did we spill any water anywhere? Did we take some pressure off the river upstream? And then they come up with our prediction and say, okay, based on all this, we breached the levee in Linden, your water is going to be a little bit less. So instead of the 22 feet, maybe we'll back that off and go 21.8, which, you know, 0.2 makes a big, big difference. So our volunteers, when they call up, we'll have people at City Hall. They'll know what to say. They'll know where to turn these people loose. And we're going to have this year, or any other year for that matter, in a flood situation, what we call a gatekeeper. Somebody's going to be standing in our shop gate. They'll be all in reflective, retroreflective material, and they're going to be telling you where to park your car, come up, check in, sign in. I want your name, address, and phone number. When you leave our site, you will check in with the gatekeeper, and they will cross you off of that list so that we can account for that person. We can also account for that person through FEMA. So if they came in and we've got them in at 9 o'clock, got them leaving at 11, we've got 2 hours of voluntary labor that we can get paid back some of that in portion by FEMA. But most of all, it just comes down to safety, that we can track these people and know where they're at and know that they were here and they left. And then after the flood, obviously, I don't know how many of you actually saw what was left after the flood in 2009. We had silt yay deep on some of our streets, logs, trees. We had fence pieces, barbed wire, all kinds of stuff. We were fortunate not to get a whole bunch of hazardous material coming down on top of us and depositing itself in Ferndale, because then we become responsible for that. It doesn't matter where it came from. It landed on us. It's ours. So then we have to pay the right people to come up, do their tests, and figure out where to put it.
Do we have to pick up other people's flood debris?
Yeah. They don't have to take that themselves. Mm-hmm. If it's in their yard, mm-hmm. they can bring it to us.
Okay.
That helps us track that for FEMA. If they just take it themselves mm-hmm. and they're out the money, that doesn't go towards the flood fight itself and the whole FEMA dollar amount for that $740,000. So if you have stuff like that, go ahead and take it down to City Hall, drop it off behind there, and we'll make a containment unit down there. It might change a little bit once the new library and that's built out. Mm-hmm. We might have a different configuration. We might have to come up with a different location. But right now, that's probably the best place for it. It's got lights. Plenty of people see it, so you're not in there hopefully stealing stuff that people drop off. And that helps us account for our tracking of how many dollars we're going to spend to get rid of it.
Okay. The next section is our hotspots, so if you guys have any other questions.
Yeah, this is just a little bit of a slideshow when you put together from 2009 and some other stuff we did.
And I followed you, big river, when you called.
You young people know your
fancy. So any questions of Public Works? Customer Zimmerman?
Yeah, Bo, you're Janice Francis. You know, we were real successful here the last few years getting the feds, the Army Corps, just to come in and, like you say, they have precedent. We've got a nice little run along there for a trail or anything else, stuff that, you know, we were looking at investing over the long run, is where we have those Jersey barriers and the big super sacks. Do we have like a Christmas list or a proposal out to the Army Corps of Engineers just in case they have something spare to do someday?
We have put funds towards design for that levee structure, to where the one thing that you really have to be careful with a river like that is on that bend going too steep on that shear. If we just drop that thing straight off, it doesn't have nearly the weight behind it that it needs to hold up, so it can undermine and eat out. And that's kind of what happened when we rebuilt that structure. We had a big spot that wore out, and it was probably close to 7 feet from underneath the rope is how far that dug into that levee. Well, that was because it was so steep. So they graded that thing out a little bit, poured some more rock in, and built a bench down there and graded it up. So we really have to be careful of how high we go to build that flat surface versus how steep we need to get into the bank without filling the river up with rock.
Bo, explain to you with a couple of slides there on the chimneys.
Oh, the chimneys, what we've got is catch basins or pipes. We have drains that go through the levee structure itself to drain the road. In order to keep the river in the banks and not coming back through those drains or catch basins, we build chimneys around the catch basins. So you might see a stack about that tall sitting out on Main Street, go, what is that? Somebody's going to hit that. Well, if we don't build that, Main Street floods out pretty quickly. The problem with the chimney is that you're also holding water from getting into the catch basin. So if we build them too soon, we're flooding Main Street with rainwater. If we build them too late, we're flooding Main Street with river water. So it's really a timing deal. We got to keep our eye on the river level and how much is coming back through those catch basins and build them. Hopefully, and it stops raining. But that's where you see the river, the train trestle. We had to pump in there because the rainwater kept filling up that levee structure that we built underneath there to stop the water from coming around Bass, and it saturates the front side of that. We have to keep that relatively dry, otherwise it gets too soft.
Councilperson Watson?
Just a question for Mr. Taylor. Can you take some pictures of what they're doing tomorrow for the Facebook page? Do you have time, or are you going to be...
This is always with me.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Katie's volunteered to bring her nice, fancy camera in.
Great. Because that'd be nice, because then people will see the pictures of you guys practicing, and it'll make them think about...
I think I did that last year, too. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you did, yeah.
But it's supposed to at least one photo.
It's nice, and everybody loves the Facebook page anyways. It's just another way to get some pictures out there.
Councilperson Mutchler?
So when one of these events, hopefully not soon, happen, a Facebook page indicates if you would like to volunteer, you go here. Kind of, and our insurance covers that kind of thing.
So, yeah, we've been advised related to insurance for insurance purposes regarding volunteers. And the waiver we have was recommended by them. So.
Okay, further questions, Public Works?
No.
Okay, thank you. Well done.
Thank you.
Very nice, thank you.
We enjoyed the music.
The music was a good one.
So just so I can get some people out of here on time because they have a busy schedule, let's bump capital projects up to next on the agenda, and then we'll do the C2 water softening after that. So, Katie, your show.
All right, thanks. Can make Sam happy? Hi, Council. Hi, Katie. Hello. Okay, so capital project updates. Let's talk about Vista Drive first. We issued substantial completion to the contractor mid-September, and good news on that. That's pretty much all done. We're within budget on that project. We did get into our contingency just a little bit. We did replace a sewer, and during the course of the project, we decided to kind of expand the amount of sewer work that we were doing by replacing the individual side services out to the sidewalk so that we don't have old services under a brand new road. We just feel that that was a responsible thing to do. So, but we are within budget on that project, so that's good news. So with that, you know, as far as we, just as a reminder, we had TIB money, Transportation Improvement Board money, and we also used Transportation Benefit District money, and so we will be having a surplus of that money left over because we're staying within budget to be able to use on other projects. Let's see. Next, I don't know if anybody has any questions about that. Thornton Road, we are under budget, and by under budget I mean as far as construction goes, we had a construction contract, and we're going to finish that up, both Vista and Thornton. We're going to pay the contractor their final payment, but we'll be under our initial contract amount, so we did really well at managing the budget on that one as well. That project was issued substantial completion August 20th. Well in time before school started, and we estimate that we'll have some money because, like I said, we were able to keep things under wraps and do a good job spending the funds there. We figure we'll have about $80,000 left in the federal grant that we were awarded for that project that we hope to be able to roll into our Church Road project, so we'll have a little bit more money there. And then as far as the TBD money, we'll have about $23,000 that we'll put back into the TBD budget to use on another project. So that worked out pretty well. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about Thornton.
Councilperson Ingram?
Katie, I mentioned this, I think, the last meeting, but I don't think you were here. If we've got money left over from the Thornton project, it's not solely because of the Thornton project, but also because of Cascadia School, the intersection at Thornton and Church, right in the center of the intersection where there's a manhole, is just crumbling. Those trucks have just carved that up so badly, making that turning going either from Church down Thornton during the school construction, or now from going up Thornton and turning onto Church from the Thornton construction project. The center of that intersection is just destroyed. Could we maybe look at what, if anything, we can do to kind of rehabilitate that? I mean, it was a fairly decent road before they ran 2,000 trucks through there.
Yeah, we can take a look at it. As far as our Thornton Road project goes, because it's so far out of our project limits, we're very our hands are pretty much tied as far as where we can spend federal money. There's some pretty serious constraints that you don't want to mess with, otherwise risk never getting money again. Nobody wants to do that. But we can definitely go out and take a look and see if there's something that we can do, you know, now, or maybe if we can do a small project to kind of fix it up. Then
that'd be great.
Let's see. So next on the list is Church Road. Just to give you a small update on that, we are working with the overhead utilities. They still got their drop-dead date to move their poles. I know PSE is actively working on a design to shift their power lines out of our new road. And I know that they've been talking with property owners as far as getting easements where they need in order to get that done. So that's pretty much all I have for Church Road.
Okay, any questions on Church? Councilperson Mutchler?
So, property owner has sold property to us, right, but then they're going to end up selling more property to the power lines as an additional step. Okay.
Do you sell, or do you just let them put something there? Are they actually selling?
Puget Sound Energy, what they do is they buy easement rights, mm-hmm. And in order to either put a pole on the private property. Some cases there might be enough right-of-way on the back of the walk. When we buy right-of-way, we buy enough to build our road, not necessarily worry about the utilities. So they might have to buy a permanent easement to place their pole, or if you've seen the power lines where they've got the cross members on the top, if they have an aerial easement where there's actually no pole but their line crosses over a property, they'll buy an aerial easement as well.
Okay. question about Church Road, then are we going to, in the next Public Works Committee, will we talk about where you are? Because I know you'd applied for a bunch of grants, so at some point we'll be hearing what you heard about that.
Yes, we're still waiting on that for the State Transportation mm-hmm. Board, but it appears that we will be getting about $2 million in federal dollars.
Oh.
But it's not, we haven't received the official letter on that yet. I was hoping to have it for tonight, but we don't have it yet. But that's where
I don't know why.
We're sitting in. So it's highly likely we will be getting the $2 million.
Oh, okay.
Okay, anything else?
Two more short things. Lego Avenue, Washington Street intersection, we met with the committee last week to determine an option to go on. We've actually put that project out to bid on our small works roster. Puget Sound Energy, we're installing three lights, one new pole, two lights on existing poles. They should be out very first week in November to get that done. So as far as the road project goes, we'll be opening bids on the 29th, which is Tuesday before your committee meeting. We'll be presenting that at the committee meeting and then to council November 4th. So we're really pushing on this project. And, you know, the question is whether it's like my mantra or something. We're just going to keep pushing to get this project done until the weather says we can't. So, anyway, that's where we're at with that.
Councilperson Goodrich?
The new light's going to be LEDs?
Yes, they are. And we're actually, we spent about $4,000 on the lights, but we'll be getting a small rebate back from PSC because they are LEDs. I don't know the dollar value of that yet. And then finally, I'm working to get a contract put together, also to be let out on a small public works contract for street trees on Main Street. So hopefully we can get a contractor out November sometime and get those installed. That's what I have.
Okay, any questions for road projects?
So Katie's just going to do road for capital and you'll do library updates?
Okay. Thank you.
And BMX bike construction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks, Katie.
Okay, Greg, library.
All right, library, as you've undoubtedly seen, we're digging an underground library, it appears, from all the dirt that's out there. Actually, the prior contractor came close to but didn't get all the way to the sidewalk. So that's what they're pulling out, that the last of the unsuitable soils right next to the sidewalk, and there actually was a pocket of peat that we didn't know. We go out there and we pothole, but you don't know what's 4 feet one way or 6 feet another. By golly, the glaciers are not even in their distribution of materials. So we're digging that out. As you can see, they're starting to set out the frames for the foundation. They're on site. Minergy is doing the utility work, which is that dig out as well as the running of the water sewer lines. Our next library meeting is actually October 29th. We'll eventually get to probably weekly construction meetings. Right now we're going, at least initially, every 2 weeks. But all the contracts are signed. We're going to it, and by golly, we're going to build ourselves a library pretty soon.
Questions? Seeing none. Are you going to handle BMX bike park?
Yeah. Patrick Dahl, the main proponent of the bike park, has continued to work on the bike park. If any of you've gone down to the ball fields, you'll see that he has an excavator out there, so he's doing that to help to shape the course a little bit. One of the things that he'd asked us to do, and we were already scheduled to do it, was put the ecology blocks blocking the additional parking lot. We had to wait until the practices for the youth sports had been done for the fall. So now that's taken care of. Now we're not going to have people doing donuts in the BMX park. But he is making good progress. He's right where he expects to be. One of the things he's done is he's tried to shape it a little bit more, and he's talked with us a little bit about how to minimize the impacts on that northeastern property owner. And so hopefully he'll be able to do that.
Okay. Questions for him?
Is he going to plan to open that in the springtime?
Say what now?
Spring.
Does he plan on opening that in the springtime?
Not Not for sure. I think he's looking more at summer. He's going to be looking at shaping it and then doing some of the planting that he needs to do. But by next year, by next summer.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yeah. I was just thinking with all the planting of the trees along the dike as mediation things, maybe there would be some sort of a tree pattern that would be acceptable to Joel and his wife's name. Maybe that would be, as we talked about, a larger, taller fence or something that would, you know, mediate any impact, but maybe a tree barrier of some sort, evergreen of some sort would be, and it would be available and easy and inexpensive.
Absolutely, that's something that we can consider. We're also looking, you know, anybody have like surplus rhododendrons or things like that that could be planted. So Patrick is looking, we're also looking, and we'll go from there.
Okay, so that's it for that portion. Okay, so next was on the agenda that you pulled off from the consent agenda. That's the water softening full-scale design phase contract authorization. In Public Works Committee on Wednesday, Public Works Director Janice Marlega noted that now that the pilot study and project report draft have been completed on the water softening system project, the next step is to hire a consultant to do the design work for the actual project. The goal is that work will be ready to bid in February so that work can begin in April. The project draft report is being reviewed by the State Department of Health, and it could take a month or two for that review to be finalized. She noted, though, that that doesn't stop the city from beginning design of the system. This timeline allows the city to remain on track for bringing the new water softening system online in September of 2014, not soon enough for the mayor. The contract amount is not to exceed $125,000. Director Marlega explained for the design work, generally design portion is approximately 10% to 15% of the estimated cost of the construction. This contract is well before that figure. Councilperson Mutchler and committee moved and Councilperson Ingram seconded to recommend approval and place the item on the regular meeting consent agenda. And then earlier, Councilperson Zimmerman asked to bring it off, so the floor goes to Councilperson Zimmerman.
Lloyd Zimmerman, your council person,
and my credibility was called into question during the last committee meeting, and I try not to brag about all the crazy stuff I've done. And I say crazy because it's a multitude of different endeavors and careers and career paths and industries I've been involved with. So I just wanted to go over this a little bit. Here we have, this represents all the business cards over a 10-year period of time.
There we go. Thank you very much, Sam. And it's pretty interesting. There's, I haven't met anyone yet that has come up with 32 different business cards over a 10-year period of time. Okay? And at age 23, I was a technical recruiter working with personnel from Sandia Labs and Los Alamos Labs in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in a real broad range of engineering specialties. And I'll come back to that. There's other issues regarding real estate, solar energy, solar engineering, alternative energies, all with the idea of saving money or doing good things for the environment, and creating jobs with new technology. Also, as in real estate, but right down here, Mr. Mayor, there's AU Water Store, and that was what I was involved with as a salesman, as a going out there and kind of working with the technical staff, because Albuquerque, New Mexico is out in the middle of the High Plains Desert. They got a lot of water, the Rio Grande goes through there. However, when you pump it up from down below, it's very, very hard, very much grains of hardness. So, from there, I also started a little company called Aquatech. And this really went out maybe over a period of 2 years. A lot of times I had two or three jobs
point
at the same
order,
time.
Mr. Mayor. Point of order, Councilperson Olson.
I thought we were talking about the water softening full-scale design phase contract authorization.
Yes, we are.
I believe we're getting, to there.
Then it needs to get germane very soon.
Yeah, because I want to, either that or I'm going to put forth a motion to vote on.
Okay. So, getting on to it, I do have a technical background in this area.
Now, what the point is right now, it's all about money. This project that we've looked through over a period of time here, the water problem is unique to Ferndale. This area.
Mr. Mayor, is Councilmember Zimmerman talking strictly to the audience, or is he trying to discuss this with council?
Can you hear me?
No, I can't, actually, okay. Lloyd. I need to be able to see your lips move. I'm serious.
He's actually serious.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here
can
we
you,
go.
Can you just take your seat so we can all talk?
I got some other stuff that I can show. But the idea here is getting back to the idea is that, one, technically, it's not a water softener. It's a nanofiltration. Water softener is an ionic exchange, exchanging a sodium molecule for a calcium molecule. And it's the calcium that's giving us that potential for scaling. It gets on the all the utilities, it's done different stuff, and so this is the problem. And so now we're going to move forward with a $2 million, is that pretty close around there, $2 million solution?
That's correct.
Well, what I've researched, and I've been dropping little hints over the last couple of years, that the answer is an electrostatic solution. And when I talk with the company, they say, yeah, we can do this, $25,000. And if that's double it, if there's 200% margin for error, that's still, that's like $2 to $3 per.
Councilperson Olson?
I'd like to put forth a motion to approve the full-scale design phase contract authorization.
I'm going to second that motion.
I saw this. I saw the floor, please.
We'll allow some discussion, but let's do some.
This is $2 million.
Let's do some explanation.
It'd be more appropriate if you sat in your seat and discussed it with council.
It isn't a present. This isn't a time for presentations to the public, Councilor Zimmerman. In committee, they voted to move this forward. We have a motion, a second, to move it forward in a vote. So now we're in a council discussion. This isn't a avenue for you to present what is your opinion of how we should do the water treatment.
Why not?
Because your one vote that you're... Let's do it this way. Does anyone on council... Does the council wish to have Councilperson Zimmerman go forward with his presentation on water treatment? Councilperson Mutchler.
I move to end discussion and move for the vote.
I'll second that.
And so, there's no discussion, so we're going to move to a vote on this. I'm sorry, but that's the...
There's other avenues to deal with this.
End of discussion.
Okay.
Okay, call for the question. I'll wait till he gets back in his seat. Okay, moving second, call for the question. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, for the motion before you, opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Motion on the floor. All those in favor of authorization, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Mr. Zimmerman, not excused.
Councilor Zimmerman, are you leaving the chambers?
I move that Councilmember Zimmerman be marked with an unexcused absence starting at 7:04 p.m. for this council meeting.
Second.
I'm going to go to clerk.
It's appropriate.
Okay. Yep. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Okay, motion carries 6-0. Now that done.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilperson Ingram.
Question.
Yes.
It's been a long time, and my brain leaks. AWC training, right after I won my first election, we were told that if a council member walks out of a meeting, that is a resignation.
I don't believe so.
No, you have to actually say the words. You have to say the words and then leave. I'm almost positive you have to say the words.
I don't,
Okay. You have to say it. I told you my brain leaks.
Okay. Councilperson Messler?
If you don't mind, I just want to repeat something I said at committee. What Councilmember Zimmerman has simply failed to do is to convince three other council members of this position. And we have folks here running for council. Three of you, it looks like. And you need to understand that you may think you're the smartest person in the room, that you're the only one right. You have to convince three more of us, to do this. It might seem like a daunting task, but that's what democracy does. So I made that point Wednesday to Councilmember Zimmerman. I want to make that point to anyone that might sit in this chair next time. You've got to convince three more people of your viewpoint. Sometimes you do, as I've found out, sometimes you don't, but you don't leave a meeting because you don't get your own way. And that's all I got to say about that.
Well said, and thank you for saying that. Okay, let's move on. This is the public hearing on the 2016 UGA Population Employment Estimation Resolution.
All right, good evening, Council. As part of our 2016 Comprehensive Plan Update, Whatcom County and the seven cities are working together to prepare ourselves for June 30th, 2016, which is the drop-dead date for updating our comprehensive plans and our capital facility plans. One of the major requirements of that is to understand what our population and our employment might look like in 2036. And to do that, we utilize a combination of Office of Financial Management projections for residential population and then Whatcom County's consultants' calculations for employment. Where we start off and where we have all agreed to go is the individual cities will provide a recommendation to the county as far as what we believe are reasonable population and employment allocations through 2036. The county will then look and see what Linden's requested, what Ferndale's requested, look at the overall assumed growth, and see whether or not they can accommodate all of the jurisdictions with their recommendations, or whether they need to do some horse trading, or if they ultimately have to approve or allocate less or more than the individual jurisdictions have requested. So that's why we're here tonight. The Planning Commission has made their recommendation to you. You would then make your recommendation after this public hearing to the Whatcom County Planning Commission. So there's really two parts of this. There's the residential, and then there's the employment. As you know, this will ultimately inform just how large our urban growth area is supposed to be, or will be. So what staff is recommending is shown in the attached resolution. For residential population allocation, we're recommending that you go with the high growth alternative, which is 6,833 people. The initial run-throughs of the land capacity analysis, the spreadsheet, show that if we went with the high growth scenario, our residential UGA is unlikely to change. So we think that this is a reasonable allocation. We think that it's very defendable, which is an important component of any of these discussions. And we think that the 12 comments that we added in the resolution supporting it are going to be helpful when we move forward and we talk about it with the Whatcom County Planning Commission. For the employment, we are actually recommending what we're calling a higher than high allocation, where for those of you that were on council in 2009, you'll remember that we had an allocation for employment to 2031 of over 4,000 people, nearly 5,000 people. As a result of different changes in the way that we project things, maybe some unseen hands going forward over the next 20 years, that allocation countywide is expected to go down pretty substantially. Basically, we don't expect, or the number crunchers don't expect there to be as many people employed in 2036 as we thought there would be back in 2009. So what that means is if we have an urban growth area for commercial, for employment, that was just large enough to accommodate our employment back in 2009, and then that allocation is cut in half, suddenly we're looking at a UGA that would be oversized if you go strictly by the numbers and the mathematics. If you'll recall, that is ultimately what the Growth Management Hearings Board looks at, are the numbers and whether or not the conclusions reached by the Whatcom County Council are reasonable and free of error. We're benefiting by substantially more time to go over the maps and to see what pieces of property are already developed and are not developed, and we're finding errors from the 2009 process. So we're hoping that we can accommodate some of them, but we're not sure if we can get all that way. Skipping ahead about four or five steps in 2 or 3 years, because we're not talking about the UGA size yet, but I'm wanting to let you know that in the higher than high employment allocation that we are recommending, even with that higher than high, we are still looking at possibly some struggles as far as defending our existing commercial and industrial UGA. With all of that said, we are recommending 2,802 employment allocation through 2036. We are attaching 9 additional comments, and we would like to stress to you, the mayor, and other elected officials that as we go through this next stage of the process, it's going to be up to you to explain why the city of Ferndale has gotten to the position that we are in, and why you believe, if you do believe, that our existing UGA should be preserved.
So this is a public hearing, so technical questions of staff only, not voting at this time. So I have Councilperson Watson, Goodrich, and then Mutchler. So Councilperson Watson.
I'm just wondering, how did you choose your 12 comments? Was there something that the county council or the planning commission wants to hear for justification? I mean, I'm just wondering how you chose the comments to go with the different numbers.
Really good question. Some of them were very obvious. For instance, with residential, as you see on page 57 of your packet, Ferndale's population has sustained itself over the Growth Management Act era. That's something that few other jurisdictions can say. We don't have a lot of peaks and valleys. Other ones are things that have come up during the 2009 process, ones that, because there's only so much population to go around, one of the things that the county council will be looking at is why should the trend line that we are seeing now be expected to change?
So is that why you mentioned Western Washington?
That is.
So you're going to the county, okay.
Where I mentioned Western Washington University, because Western has grown very quickly over the last 20 years. We know that we are dealing with the baby boom echo right now as their children are going through the college age. We are also seeing that there are some trend lines which would suggest that that population will tend to even out, that it will not grow as quickly over the next 20 years as it did in the last 20 years. Therefore, we are not likely to see Western essentially have again its student population. That's the same reason as we're talking about Sudden Valley, which is pretty well developed now, but it was developed over the course of the last 20 years. It's not likely that we're going to see a development like that again in the unincorporated county, and why we don't expect its population growth to continue.
And I'm assuming you'll be able to talk to them as well. These comments aren't going to be our only defense. If they're unhappy with our numbers, we'll be able to go back and forth with them as well.
Certainly, and you know, to be perfectly frank, the current composition of the Whatcom County Planning Commission and Council would tend to be that they are probably looking for information that would support our allocation. Whether that changes or not in the future, you know, we'll see after November. But it's important that the county have something, because it's the county that's going to be challenged mm-hmm. if they come to a conclusion that's not supported by fact.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilperson Goodrich, Metzler, and then Olson.
Mine was on the employment numbers. Since 2009, we've seen several businesses move from Bellingham to Ferndale. We still have a lot of I-5 corridor that's undeveloped. To say that, I mean, there's a possibility of seeing a decrease in employment, I don't see that for Ferndale unless the economy tanks drastically, again or something. But over the next 20 years, I see more and more stuff coming here. And so how did that fit into the employment numbers? Or can you say it's kind of hard to justify our UGA? Why, in 20 years, I can see us filling up our UGA.
And you hit the nail on the head, because I think that we can point to a lot of different factors where, you know, Bellingham has historically dominated employment because it had, in part, the available land where new development could build itself. So if we're looking simply at trend lines, Bellingham's continued to dominate and is going to be the employment and retail center of the county. But what we're arguing, and I hope that we include in these comments, and if we don't, then please feel free to add them, is that if you understand that retail and industrial development depend on traffic, both to get their customers to their store and to get their goods to the market, that the remaining land in most other jurisdictions, that there simply is either not available land or the remaining land is away from those corridors. Whereas in Ferndale, we still have land that is right on those corridors. We also have land that's constrained by wetlands, but the developable land we have is very marketable and very attractive. And the fact that development has not yet gotten here to the extent that we think it will does not mean that somewhere, maybe not next year, maybe not in the next 5 years, at some point we believe that that it will switch, where there simply won't be land to develop the next big box store. And stop talking about big box store, because Ferndale has been accused of trying to chase them. There might not be land for a new cell phone store. There might not be land for the Ma and Pa widget manufacturer. And that's where we think that Ferndale is very poised for that next stage.
Because we've seen an increase in our manufacturing service type things, but not the retail sales. And I don't know how many that equates to, like FastCap moving here, how many employees that creates. I know some businesses have added shifts and things, and I don't know to their existing structures. And so I don't know how you track those numbers of employment.
Well, it is really difficult, and that's why this is part of where you earn your paycheck, is because if they're just looking at the trend lines, and if they're saying, show me good reason why this trend line should change, and if we acknowledge, well, it has not changed yet, it puts the county at the in the position of, gosh, well, give us something to hang our hat on. I think that they are predisposed to agree with where you're coming from, but they really need something that is not clearly erroneous to say, yes, this is true. Without the track record, we have a difficult time of doing it. Plus, they're in a really tight situation right now where if the overall county allocation is so much less than it used to be, right now they might be feeling like they are tasked with which jurisdiction do we rip the heart out of. And so that's something that we're, as planners, trying to figure out is this employment allocation sufficient, or should we increase it in order to allow some market factor to take place, where maybe there is going to be more room for growth in Sumas, and we should allow them not only to have 100 people over the next 20 years. I'm not sure if that's the exact number.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Olson.
Yeah, as I recall, the Planning Commission has looked at this twice, and I haven't looked at those, but 7-0 support from the Planning Commission, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
For this change, okay, thank you.
Councilperson Olson?
Yori, if the jail comes, we're going to get credit for all those inmates as residents because they're going to get mail here, they're going to get services here, and they're going to be at a Ferndale address. And if the sheriff's department moves there, then all those jobs and what have you, those are also new Ferndale jobs, no?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay.
And they will be less Bellingham residents and less Bellingham.
Well, I mean, it helps to, if you're trying to build your numbers, that both of those are going to be significant.
Very true.
Okay, any further questions, staff, before we go to public hearing? Councilperson Goodrich?
Do you know if the Lemmy issues, how that plays into it? If part of, because they're, part of their development right now, if it happened, would be in county lands south of the city or on trust land. Does that play into
it? It does. Now, in that there are two kind of semi-external forces that are somewhat unique to Whatcom County. The tribal issue is somewhat less unique, where we have the Tulalip example just outside of Marysville. The county and Lemmy Nation have reached out to one another, and the county or the tribe is going to be actually hosting our next elected officials meeting. The thing with employment is, if the tribe were to be successful and develop a kind of Smoky Point Asher or Quesada Village esque development, it won't necessarily mean that there will be a mirror development on non-tribal property. I mean, there's only so much that the market can withstand. So we're not going to probably have two Walmarts if the tribe were to have a Walmart. We're probably not going to have another Walmart simply because there's not enough people in this area to shop. So there's not a lot of legal precedent as far as how exactly you calculate or incorporate that development in here, because ultimately the tribe is still looking for tenants, and whether or not they might have a better chance at getting them than we do, but they are not going to be able to necessarily convince a retailer that doesn't want to come here to come here. They might be able to do it more effectively than we can, but they're not going to change a firm no to a firm yes necessarily. But that the market does bring up another issue, which I think is unique to Whatcom County and that we're really looking at a little bit harder, and that's the Lower Mainland, Canada. Even though BC is expected to also slow down its growth, their slowdown over the next 20 years will mean an additional 1 million people just across the border from us. We're not talking about BC, we're talking about Vancouver on south. So an additional million people within a half-hour drive time of us with low border weights means that is a huge externality that no other county really is dealing with, where we kind of have a little bit of that down at Vancouver, Washington, and Portland, but it's not as pronounced because BC is a different country and it has a different economy. So when we had our depression, they did not, or our recession, they did not. So they continued to see development increasing over the last 4 years. So what does that do? Because it's not just our population that's fueling our stores, it's their population that's fueling our stores.
Okay. Okay, we'll move on to the public hearing portion. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. The mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members signed up prior to the beginning of the hearing will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you will be given an opportunity to address the council once we have got through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheet. Each speaker should state his or her name, address the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. So we have no one signed up. Would anyone in the audience like to speak on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I will open and close the public hearing at 7:24:22. Councilperson Mushler.
I would move the adoption of both population and employment estimation as presented by staff.
Second.
Seconded by Councilor Ingram. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you, Council.
Good job, Council. Good job, Director Burnett.
Yeah, thank you, Roy.
Okay, for Mayor Reports, interesting meeting with Small Cities Caucus. This is a pretty major deal for Whatcom County. Is the United States government is issued grants to have 4 cybersecurity learning institutions in the United States. And because Whatcom Community College has a nationally recognized expert on cybersecurity that moved from Southern California, Whatcom Community College is one of 4 in the United States to have a cybersecurity course load and department. Lots of equipment, lots of money coming our way. Pretty amazing that it's just Whatcom Community College. You look at the list and you go, and Whatcom Community College. So pretty amazing. The other one is I serve the city of Ferndale on the Whatcom Alliance for Healthcare Access, and that's WAHA. WAHA is a place where basically if you have questions on healthcare, you can go there free of charge, and they will have a counselor sit down and talk to you. They focus on low income. The interesting part is the state of Washington is number 2 in the United States for signing up for Obamacare. So pretty amazing. We're just slightly behind New York. So that's it for mayor comments and reports. Council reports. Councilperson Watson.
Don't forget, November 2nd is the fundraiser at the Senior Center. $45 for tickets. All the money's going to go to the Senior Center to make sure they can keep doing
lunch. And I was
lunch.
There Friday, and tickets are going fast.
Yes, they are. And November 7th is the 14th Annual Breakfast for the Boys and Girls Club. It's going to be over here at our event center at 7:15 a.m. Again, there's no charge to go, but it is nice if you make a donation.
It is where at the?
The Ferndale Event Center. November 7th begins at 7:15 a.m.
Thursday.
I believe that is a Thursday,
yeah,
yes.
You're okay. Yes. Get there just to be able to get parking.
Yes, yeah, the parking last year.
Yeah, get there early just to be able to get parking.
That's all. Thank you.
Any other council reports? Okay, seeing none, department reports. Finance director.
Kevin.
City administrator.
I meant to add during the report on the library that we've received an email this afternoon that the Whatcom Community Foundation has now fulfilled all of the requirements of the Northcliffe grant. So that $250,000 that towards the library construction is now secured. So that was a bit, I know the folks at the Community Foundation were signing a collective big sigh of relief.
I forgot one thing I wanted to ask Sam.
Sure.
Were you going to put up a construction webcam on top of the PCA annex?
We looked into it, but it was approximately $5,000. Oh. So we decided not.
I got a GoPro 3.
You want to stand up on
community development?
No.
Clerk.
Oh, we are taking snapshots of it so that we can show that later. That's all I got.
Public Works.
Nothing.
Before we go to police, in committee, we were happy to report that we are not doing a job search for new police chief. We have a police chief that is committed to work a little bit longer, so we're all happy about that.
Tell Nancy, thank you.
Council, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Move second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.